Mr. Whitaker, Reel 6. We're talking about your training as a young specialist in Palestine. And when they trained you, did they train you all the same? Or were you always destined to be an OP ACK as opposed to a GPO ACK?
No. At this particular time, our battery commander, or the Major Bertie, had this idea of having people who could do all jobs. And I was in under signalling and specialist. He had this idea that there'd be occasions which he explained to us, for instance, at an OP, where there wouldn't always be room for a signaller. At an OP, there was usually, for instance, there would be the officer, a signaller, driver, OPAC, who was the officer's assistant. Major Birkin's idea, there wouldn't always be room for them, and if the captain had a truck where even if you could drive as well, better still, but only the captain, driver, and a signaller, oblique specialist. And that was what we were particularly being trained for.
So it was with more regard to being out as an observation post thing rather than at the gun position.
Yes, or at the gun position where we could come in useful. If you've got people who could, if anything happened to the gun position officer or his assistant, you'd have somebody to take over.
Now, did anything else happen while you were at Hadera before you went off to Mersa Matruh?
The thing that interested me particularly, we were attached to, would you believe, a cavalry division, and our officers had horses. But what I was going to say was interesting to me. I met my next door neighbour, their son, who was in the Sherwood Rangers, and a time or two we met down on the beach and things, which are in all places, and they had horses, which I still, most of our officers rode horses, but I think they regarded it more as fun. But these chaps were there, and I couldn't help feeling, listening to the news from France and things, tanks, and thought, good grief, what are we doing? Also met an old school hero of mine, who'd been the crack sport and fine footballer, fine cricketer, and they were just rather, I'm not big, but they're, I remember his name, Phil Bostock, slightly smaller than myself and a spotty young man, my big hero, and there he was, we met in the middle of Palestine. Other thing I remember, we saw the Wizard of Oz at the local cinema.
Was there much entertainment while you were there? I mean, was much put on for you?
Not put on, but we had quite a lot. One of the characters there, Battery Clark, whose name I've quite forgotten, bought an American car. And I don't know how I got in with him, but a lot of us, we had to pay for petrol. We went on trips in this big brute, which was, well, you know, to Jerusalem and Tel Aviv. Had a look round Jaffa, where the big signs at the entrance to Jaffa said strictly forbidden to the army personnel.
Did you have to take precautions? I mean, it had only a few years had been the Arab Revolt, and then,
They told us to, I think, looking back, they skimmed over it rather. They just told us to be careful. Palestine police didn't like us.
Why not?
I don't know, though. I think they regarded the army, the army in very high regard.
How did they show their dislike? Do you know what I mean?
Well, one of them in particular, in Hadera, there was a big policeman who, would, if he was walking on the street, he'd tell you to get out of the way, he'd literally tell you out of the way. But they just showed generally that they didn't. The native levies, the Arabs or Jewish or whatever, they were all right, but the English, they were all sergeants or they definitely had a not a very high regard of the army. But the other thing about Hadera was the was all the news from France which was coming through. And of course, while we were there, was the news that France had fallen.
How did that affect you all?
Well, we didn't at the time, a lot of us, we didn't think we'd ever get home again. We couldn't see any, seeing how we were armed with the old 18 pounders, you know, the most modern bit of which was the rubber tyres, cavalry, and we'd heard about the Blitzkrieg, you know, and the German Air Force, and, quite frankly, I know I began to wondered if I should ever get home again.
You thought that when you met the German force or the Italian forces, that they'd come, they'd just outclass you?
Well, I began to think, you know, it was, I think the main feeling was we were out in Palestine and all this was happening in France and we should be sort of, the war would be over and we should be left, you know, what do we do? That sort of thing.
Now, were there any special preparations before you went off in June to Mersin-Matruh?
They did. At Habira, we had everybody came to see us. We always seemed to be, it was always spit and polish. And to tell you the truth, I hardly saw any of them. There was Wavell and loads of people, but there were a lot of the things. In the middle of the camp, there was quite a big sand patch, and they brought all one time, for instance, they brought all the vehicles you've ever seen to see how they went in sand, and they tried some the channels, which later, I think we carried them all the time anyway. These were metal oblong, rectangular oblong things you put down to run over sand, or sand mats, which were long pieces of canvas. And they tried, you know, the Australians brought their front wheel drive and the quads and things. They tried them all these things in these sand, which was, you know, they did a lot of experimenting and seeing how to get out of sand. We did strike at a time or two, of course, out in doing operations in Palestine.
Any other preparations?
No, it was mainly, you know, the training, as I say, did begin to get stiffer. And we'd begun to know, we'd begun to get to know our officers. Met the adjutant once on one of our trips out, Captain Batt. He was a regular. I think he'd been the adjutant in the drill hall. But he met us one day. We were reeling wiring and he told us, which I later found was a good old regular thing, and he informed us it wasn't an epic trip to Brighton. We were supposed to be soldiers. We were singing while we laid wire out or something. And he noted names and numbers. Produced a cartoon. I can always remember that. I produced a cartoon afterwards. I can't tell you now whether it was true or not. We had a chap called George Hammond who since died, and I produced this cartoon. I can remember this adjutant rode up to us on this huge horse and shouted, "Are you George Beer?" All the vehicles had these GB or whatever. And I produced this cartoon with this little chap saying, "No, sir, I'm George Hammond." But that's, this reprimand inspired me to that. But I always remember he really ticked us off. We were enjoying ourselves.
What about the other officers? You've told us something about the officers. You said you started to get to know them. Did you?
Yes, Birkin was in charge of it, Major Birkin. As I've said, he began to put his mark on the battery, like these things, which weren't producing this specialist of sequels and things like that. He was quite keen on people doing other jobs, knowing what was Pringle. He was a troop, what was he? A troop captain? Just before we left England, we got two people who did become really part of the regiment. One particularly, Graham Slynn, and a chap called Corbett Thompson. Anthony, I think his name was. Tony, we called him. They come from the Honourable Artillery Company. And Graham Slim became one of the, everybody liked him, he was another of the chap you'd have followed anywhere. Huge, great tall chap, well over 6 foot thin. But always the first chap I started drawing cartoons of without getting in trouble, always used to draw him as a gas lamp, with the old fashioned gas lamp, and I had a thing to rest his ladders on, and I did these three little things with his pips on his shoulder. Always drew it, always drew a gas lamp. The first one with this gunner saluting this thing, obviously drunk, and saying, "Good night, Captain Schlin." But he really was, everybody liked him.
What about
Thompson? Wasn't such a personality, but still a very pleasant. But they were, you know, they joined us. They were, I think he was in B, I can't remember whether he was in B2, but he soon, I know he seemed to be a captain in no time. Some of my friends had begun to get promoted. Fred Langford had got a strike. Of course, our little clique of nonsense broken up. You know, really, we broke up in rugby, but Fred was still with us. He was a signal.
Did it make much difference when, if someone got just a stripe or?
Not particularly, except you had to remember to call them Bombardier when you were. I think you usually were reverted to Christian names when we were out of, but in, within the hearing of officers or others, you know, it depended who they were. You got one or two of felt the feet of it, but mostly they were pretty good. Chap I've mentioned before, Jackie Gore, he was his usual self. He was another chap full of bright ideas, and he was all for, although he always used to tell, I can remember always telling me that I was a so-and-so sickle, not a something specialist, you know, not to get big ideas. I'd say we began to get to know who the officers were and where they fitted in. In other words, we were becoming a team.
Now, what about the move to Merse and Matruh? What do you remember? That was in mid-June,
yes, 23rd
of June.
Happened, seemed to come all of a sudden, you know. The Italians came into the war. Of course, France had fallen. And this brigadier of whom I spoke, he came and saw us and told us that he'd been asked to send the best regiment. They always tell you this, don't they, when they're going to tell you to be a nasty job. And he was going to send us, and we were going up to this place called the Western Desert, which I'd heard of Egypt. Egypt I didn't know. And I knew between Egypt and Palestine there was a canal. And I must admit, I thought I was pretty hot on geography. People talking about this Western Desert. I'd heard of the Sahara, but anyway, we were brought up to strengthen the equipment. You know, lots of coming and going. I can't remember. I know when we were first in Palestine, we had telephones in leather cases. First World War. Don 3 or something, but I definitely know when the time we're up in Matruh, we've got the metal case thing, so probably we got better equipment. I still have the same gun, but the signal equipment, I know definitely telephones, I do remember having these leather case things. Heliographs too I had in Palestine, which I haven't. I heard about heliographs.
Did you use them much?
Only for more or less playing with it. I know we once did a thing where we got a signal from about 18 to 20 miles, which pleased us a lot.
Now, what about the actual move?
But the move, we got on, I know we got on the train and there was all sorts of, I can't remember, but there seemed to be a lot of hoo-ha about getting these trains moving. There were wild rumours about it, well known for you to come around selling newspapers. We'd moved from one camp to another with us. The rumours that either he'd been shot or put in jail as a German spy because he wanted to come with us up the desert. But anyway, we got on the train and off we went, as usual, through the night, arriving at the Kantara, the Suez Canal, the next morning. No, I believe there was a bridge across later, but we got on the ferry. I took two of my rotten pictures. I bought a camera first. Then, of course, we arrived on the other bank. We were in Egypt, Ismailia. Fascinating little town, white, flat roof houses, beautiful little town, palm trees, you know, the original Egyptian town. Nice wide, quite wide streets. And we were put up near the airfield. There was an airfield there. And I was delighted to see two of the airplanes I'd never seen being ancient aircraft spotted. Wellesley bombers. I knew there was an airfield because they'd flown from there on long distance. They'd done some, tried to do world record long distance trips. Ancient biplanes, troop carriers with about big biplane troop carriers. Noah's Ark. And there was, you know, we heard about the Germans with the Stukas and the Messerschmitts. We went on from there after a short break, got on the train together up to, and on we went up to, then the weather we stopped, we finished up in Mersey Latrobe.
What were your first impressions of Mersey then?
Well, my own first impressions were they didn't take us into the town. We stopped on the eastern side and said, dig. It was really bombed to hell, they told us. And we dug not very later. We did learn to dig very quickly. I dug for a bit and then got sunstroke. And so I spent most of that day in the MO's. When I came to, I was flat out. When I came to, I was in the MO's lorry or whatever. And
was that the first time you'd had trouble with sunstroke?
First time I'd had trouble.
Was there any reason for it?
No.
Other than, you know.
Well, when you say that, I remember now I'd had sunburn in Hadera. And sunburn was a self-inflicted wound. So I got somebody to pour olive oil down me and then swore when the officer asked me why I was sweating so much. Said because I was hot, sir. That hurt. But I literally passed out with it. That was just, I hadn't been sunbathing. It was on the beach and you didn't realise even in the water. But up at Mersey I did actually, digging 1 minute, bang, next minute I went, well, sometime later woke up and I got only trouble afterwards.
How long did it take to get better? I mean, you know.
I was working again the next day.
And, so what was it? Were these the initial positions they were taking up? Or?
No, we moved to those after, I think it was within a day or two. We moved into positions. One troop was somewhere up near the A troop. I think I was still with A troop. But they had gun positions near a bit of the railway lines. But the chief thing there, we soon learned the Italians rode every day and they three-motored their S-79s, the three-motored bombs. And they just fly over. There's a lot of very, the Egyptians were defending it with AK-AT guns and they fired, there was a lot of firing and there was an awful lot of bombs came down and so we learned to dig. My word, did we dig. Our miners came into their own there. We had the best shelters you ever seen in your life.
What were the shelters like? Can you describe them and how they were improved?
The first thing we did was we dug the biggest holes. We went down, the sand was in place, it was fairly firm. I've never thought till maybe just now, but where we got the materials from, iron, railway lines, sleepers. The entrances were all zigzag, so that, you know, to avoid bomb blasts.
How deep would they be?
Oh, I couldn't say, but they really were deep. Some, and heavily sandbagged on top. I can't remember if we got any concrete or anything. Oh, zinc, you know, corrugated iron, tons of it. I suppose we went, I suppose we stole it, put it. But of course, we got miners, as I say, and they all, the mucked, whatever, a lot of them, 4 to 6 were mainly miners, but they helped all over the place. Atrium, restroom, where that was a, we had a bomb fall within feet of it, never touched it.
So what would the restroom be like? I mean, would it be? Would you be able to stand up in it?
Oh, yes, yes, we had bags of headroom, bunks, built-in bunks, 2 or 3 high, rough tables, tilly lamps, you know, pressurised, paraffin lamps with a mantle, and you pressurise them. Oh yes, there were.
So you'd have a restroom. And how many men would? How do you know roughly what dimensions it was? How many men could be in it?
Room, everybody could get in at a pinch, which was a 4-gun cruise, 24 signals. You know the.
So you're talking quite a substantial size room.
Oh yes, as I say, there were some.
So you'd have a restroom, and what else would you have?
Well, mainly it was a sort of, they'd put bunks on the side, and the room in the middle was the restroom.
So that was your sleeping accommodation?
That was your sleeping accommodation. Slip trenches against the, and the gun pits became more and more elaborate.
In what way?
More and more sandbags, and some of them even dug out and put, a sort of restroom at the side, rather than just, you know, they'd do a dugout and then they'd sandbag the whole thing over, and some of those became quite elaborate. But me, I was concerned mainly with the, you know, as a signal, I was just, all I had was a place down in the restroom. But sometime there, I moved on to the command post, where we again we had another marvellous restroom. The command post itself, I think, must have been an Italian place, because that had concrete, I know it had 4 concrete pillars and a huge table in between the 4, built into the 4 pillars. It had a little balcony place on top where Major Birkin had a desk now.
Would you have any...
had a little restroom attached to it, but that was for maybe a dozen people. But we did have a bigger restroom a bit away from the place.
Did you have an OP post out in the further out?
I can't remember, but we must have had. I think we had permanent OP posts. And I can't really remember them.
Would you have latrines provisioned?
Yes, we dug, there again, dig. Big holes, wooden, with several seats, you know, I forget, several seaters.
Were they covered or were they just open?
Just open, as far as I can remember, they were just open.
And was there any camouflage used at all?
Over the guns, camouflage netting with the scrim pulled through it.
What was scrim? Could you just explain?
Long pieces of hessian, which were dyed brown, green, 2 or 3 shades of brown and green, and you just pull it through the net, this big net, you know, a wee bit like webbing. Then they had posts, metal posts, and strung it all over the guns.
So
swimming in the tree was
marvellous. I'll come back to that. Now, what about the idea of not having tracks between places? Had they thought of that then, or, you know?
I don't think we thought much about it. Because was just stuck to the same old tracks and everything. It was
Now, what was your first bombing like? Was it high level bombing?
High level.
What was it like? It's your first time under fire. The first time you could have been killed. How did you react to your first bombing raid? What do you remember of the raids as they went on?
I can remember looking up and seeing these big silver triplanes in order and thinking, oh, jolly good, 70 knives, and going like down under the, down into the shelter as fast as I could go. But the thing was, you could often tell where they'd come, and they'd always run in a straight line. So if they were coming across, you'd probably stand out and watch after a bit. We had to watch if there were several, if there were more than one squadron. You know, if one was coming that way. But often they'd come once and they'd fly in a straight line, and wham, the whole lot had come. So if you were, if they were going across you, you'd know you were fairly safe.
What happens if they weren't? If they were, you were in line?
If you saw the women coming anywhere towards you, you'd get down quickly, which was the usual practice.
Did you have slit trenches or out back?
We had slit trenches as well as the big dugout.
So you'd just go to whatever was nearest?
So whatever was nearest, you'd get your head down. As I say, that's where we learned to dig after the first day or two.
Did you
have to tell us how not to spend the first thing. Anywhere where you stopped, if we went out in the desert on a manoeuvre, if you stopped, you'd dug.
And that's where you learnt that. You hadn't learnt that in Palestine, and no one had told.
We learnt it, but they told us. But you know, you dig a bit of a trench, and that was it. Sit in it. But by then, you got down as far as you could go.
And what would be the normal for a slit trench? I mean, are we talking 6 foot or four?
Wherever you were, you tried to dig and dig your vehicles in, which meant a sloping thing to cover so the engine, the vehicle would run into it nose down, and you'd dig it, if you could say a triangular, so that the wheels and engine were covered. In other words, it sloped down.
Below the ground, not so covered.
The front was well below the ground, and the back would stick up.
Now, it doesn't sound like you were too frightened of the high-level bombing. Would that be so, or were you nervous? Did it make you nervous?
You were frightened, all right, but there were a lot of you together, and you tried to make a joke of it. So when you were petrified for a few minutes, and then if somebody would say, oh, then, you know, they're going to the harbour, the actual harbour was quite away from us, and occasionally they'd try and drop bombs on that, where there was sometimes the odd naval vessel, which was a long way from us, and you'd say, well, thank God, it's not us this time.
Did anybody's nerve start to go? Because some people, I believe, found it very frightening, high-level bombing.
Yes.
The uncertainty.
Yes, there were some people who were, a lot of people preferred to stay in the dugouts all day. And one or two of us would take advantage of that, and they'd do your duties, and we'd go off and go swimming.